Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, I think it's fair to say that tonight has not been quite the emotional journey that last night was, but it has still been an intriguing day of tennis here at the Australian Open, day two on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. I'm David Law from BBC Radio. I'm joined by Catherine Whittaker. One take Whittaker from Eurosport. How are you doing?
Well, it was actually three take Whittaker tonight, but two of those takes were down to some absolute choice numpties. In the background.
Well saved there, Catherine.
Can you imagine what my tolerance level for numpties is?
I imagine it's...
At 11pm after not enough sleep.
No,
it's low, David.
I think it is, yes. I'm sort of gathering that. The day has been interesting. Catherine is here. Grad Matt is here. Grad Matt's smiling. He's happy enough. But then he's about half my age, so, you know, he can cope.
And he's also just witnessed the three previous takes of me saying... something other than numpty.
Yes, which we had to cut, folks, which is fine. I'd like to start the day by talking about the world number one, Simona Halep, because I feel her 6-7, I think it was 6-4, 6-2 victory over Kaya Kanepi, the woman that beat her at the US Open, just socked her off the court at the US Open. I think that was a major triumph of mind over matter. I mean, obviously, she's a great tennis player as well, and she played really good tennis. But mentally, that was one of the strongest performances I've seen from Simona Halep. I mean, obviously, we've seen many of them, most specifically the French Open final last year. But this was a really good performance on every level in that way.
Yeah, I just spoke to her. We didn't set that up.
But no,
yeah,
I didn't know that.
En route, done my three takes of a promo. But before that, I was speaking to Simona Halep. Just off the court. And
it's good, this job, isn't it? Yeah. Good to speak to the world number one.
And everything she said emphasised, reiterated exactly what you've just said, David, which is she kept on saying, I mean, she was delighted. She walked into the little interview room just off the side of the court there, and she was texting away. You know, I'd love to know who she was texting, but felt like that would have been an inappropriate first question. But yeah, she was smiling away at her phone. Very politely, she said, "Oh, you know, sorry, I just need to send this." And she had a really big grin on her face. But she, I think in all three of the questions I asked her, in all three of the answers, she referenced how tough she found it physically and how her body was tired and she felt tired.
Yeah.
Which I found interesting for a first match of the Australian Open. You know, she talked very openly about the fact that she's not quite where she wants to be. As Matt said, she'd lost five matches on the bounce.
Yeah.
Before this tournament, you know, she openly would prefer that she was still with Darren Cahill. You know, it's not her choice for that relationship to be on hold, I think is what they're calling it. So... yeah, she found tonight, for probably a combination of reasons, clearly very draining, and exactly as you say, obviously a total triumph of mind over matter. Because, well, I asked her, what on earth were you thinking, given what happened in New York at a set down? You must have just been thinking,
it's
inevitable that this is going to happen all over again. And she kind of said, yeah.
I love how honest she is.
She's fantastic, isn't she? But it's it's, I know it's a cliche, but I really believed it from her just now. It is one match at a time for her, sure.
With this draw as well, I mean, how can it not be? Who is it she's got second round, Matt?
Sophia Kenin.
Who's American, isn't it?
Yeah, was very good in the Fed Cup final and then won Hobart last week.
Crikey. And that's to play third round.
Probably Venus Williams. Who won today.
And if she gets past that.
And that was
Serena
great.
Williams.
That was a great Serena win Williams. For Venus
that
Williams.
That was a very good win. From a set down.
Yeah, a set down to Mihaela Buzanescu.
And Buzanescu was serving for the match at 5-4 as well.
Yes.
So, you know, I mean.
In the second set. Yeah.
Yes. I didn't really see that particular game. So I don't know whether Buzanescu contributed to losing her own serve, so to speak. But I don't know, Venus Williams, she turns 39 years of age in June, and her appetite for the game is just still as much as it ever was, and she just fights so hard to dig out a win from 6-7, 4-5 down. I think some monumental achievement, really, and against a very good player.
And personally, I'm pleased that she seems to be back on form again this year. I think last year she did dip, but it wasn't really a story that was talked about that much. I think people have so much respect for her, and they kind of expect her maybe to not be performing at the level she was in 2017.
And to be fair, she doesn't talk to us
no,
much,
she doesn't,
so she
no.
doesn't. For that reason too, I'm sure Simon would be shouting this if he were here. That's another reason she perhaps doesn't get the coverage that she might otherwise deserve. But I overheard, I can't even remember who it was, but it doesn't really matter who it was, because it could have been lots of people, but some sort of casual chit chat about Venus Williams the other day, you know, saying, oh, you know, what's she still doing out there? She had a dodgy last season. Why didn't she just quit? You know, she's obviously got nothing better to do with her life. And it really riled me.
Well, I'm not surprised. That's really,
really
disrespectful.
Riled me. And it really made me, you know, get a glimpse into why Venus Williams feels so damn irritated with the question, that question, you know, what motivates you to still be out there?
Yeah.
You know, as well-intentioned as that can be, it doesn't necessarily come with those connotations, but I can understand why it irritates her, and she has to explain why she's still out here.
Mm.
If I could be winning Grand Slam tennis matches, I would be. I'd be making sure that's what I was doing.
What else is supposed to be so much better?
It was a glimpse. It made me just sympathise a little bit with her, just not even wanting to face those questions. Mm. You know,
yeah.
Because to have to dignify them with a response, you know, just
actually,
bog off a lot of you.
She gave a very.
That is the motto of me and Venus Williams both.
Yes. And I'm not going to irritate Catherine, otherwise I'm going to be told to bog off. Serena Williams today.
Oh,
incidentally, I thought Venus was... I gave a nice interview on court. She was sunny in the interview on court. She has got it. You know, she can be so engaging and when she can be interested or bothered, really. I don't know. But anyway, I suppose maybe the questions are part of that too. Serena Williams was in fantastic form today. I mean, she just strode onto the court... wearing waterproofs for some reason. I didn't quite understand.
She's wearing a coat.
Yeah, I didn't really get... I mean, look, I'm not in a position to talk fashion about anybody, but I didn't understand why anybody would be wearing their waterproof jacket in 37 degrees, because that's what it looked
it's
like to me.
It's quite humid.
Right. But anyway, 32 minutes later, she was leading 6-love, 3-love, and I'm not exaggerating. It was literally 32 minutes to get
the first set was 18
games.
Minutes.
Was it?
And I believe there was a stage in that quite late on in that first set, I think it was at 5-love, where Tatiana Maria was at 7% first serves in.
Yes, not ideal.
And I just...
What is she doing? Can you imagine the locker room conversation from the coach? Make sure you get your first serve.
Yeah, interestingly...
Look up at the screen.
They do flash up stats, don't they, at the changes of ends. Don't look, Tatiana. They were both mothers which is not necessarily always of note in the way that perhaps it is bigged up. But there, Serena mentioned after the match that their children, I think it's both daughters,
yeah,
isn't
they're
it?
Friends.
They're friends. I know you've only just recovered yourself from your barrels of laughter, yeah. David, but I've got something else which might send you over the edge.
Go for it.
Tatiana Maria has fewer Instagram followers, Twitter, Instagram,
I think it was Twitter.
Twitter followers than Serena Williams's daughter's doll.
I mean, that is just plain, not only it's plain mean to have dug that stat up. I know you didn't dig it up. They stuck that up on TV. I mean, it is a fantastic stat, but I also feel terribly sorry for Tatiana Maria. Anyway, not to worry. Williams, I mean, obviously she wasn't that tested today, but she really does look on it, doesn't she? She looks in a great mental space for the event. But just the weird thing for me is that she did not do a pre-event press conference at all. She didn't do one. She's the only player who didn't do a pre-event press conference. And she basically told them, I'm not going to do one.
Well, I believe it's only a requirement for the top seeds, isn't
well,
it?
Well, that's right.
Of which she's not. So,
what is she in the world at the moment? About 16th seed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So she's got out of it.
So that is her prerogative.
And, I mean, I didn't actually get a chance to go to her press conference today. But, I mean, look, you know, again, I can understand it from her perspective. I mean, from two standpoints. One is, they are players who've been around this long must be just a bit sick of that element of the. I can understand if they are, at least, you know, they just want to play the game. The other thing is, obviously, the last time people spoke to her at length would have been just after she'd been involved in that really uncomfortable incident of which she was a big part, and certainly at least partially at fault, maybe more than partially at fault, at the US Open in the finals. So, I just feel as though she's in a good place. I know it's easy to say after 6-love, 6-2, and how much can you read into that, but I think she means business. Well, I think she's going to be... I know I've picked her to win the title, but I think she would not have a letdown if she got that far this time, the way she did in those two other finals.
It was almost as though she'd seen what Maria Sharapova did yesterday, winning 6-love, 6-love, and she thought, I want a piece of that.
Get me some Harriet Dart.
Yes.
But look, this was a very different type of... This was way
Tatiana
more emphatic
Maria.
than Sharapova.
Yes,
yeah.
Agreed.
And also
agreed.
Tatiana Maria is a more accomplished player than Harriet Dart.
Yeah. Not on serve.
Not on serve.
But,
but
that was a joke, folks. I'm
Tatiana's
sure
making me feel way much better about my first serve percentage.
It's like... The whole not coming to press thing, it's a... It's like the these players and it I think it applies more to the ones that have sort of stratospheric celebrity. They're able to construct these sort of alternate realities, aren't they? You know, I think Serena's constructed you know, in her mind this alternate reality where she doesn't even have questions to answer about the US Open. I think whatever your view on it all.
Exactly.
It's hard to argue that, you know, there aren't questions to be put to her that deserve an explanation. And I think that, yeah, she lives in a world and, you know, we hear about what it's like for super famous people, you know, that... If I were employed by Serena Williams, I wouldn't necessarily be telling her to do things differently. And I think, you know, I think there's been an element of that with Sharapova over the past couple of years, you know, almost this indignance at even having to answer the questions about it.
I wonder whether
it
is celebrity or I wonder whether, and I think it might be more about being a champion. For some of these people anyway, and look, I'm sure people would say, well, hold on, Roger Federer is a champion, Roger Federer is a celebrity, everybody's different, but these champions have an ability to block things out and be selective about what they think about in a way that I can only imagine. I wish I could be that single-minded.
Absolutely, but that's
things.
Just kind of a different way of describing an alternate reality,
yeah.
Your own constructed...
Yeah, but
reality,
I
really.
Don't think
and
it's...
What's in her mind, if you're Serena Williams, what's she got to gain from putting herself in the firing line of those questions?
Oh, well,
nothing.
Fair enough,
nothing.
I suppose, from her
it's
perspective.
It's a shame. I think it's actually a shame from all perspectives, because I think she's got a huge amount to gain, really,
and to
from
offer.
A PR perspective.
Yeah. No, I think it's a shame she didn't as well. I think it would have been better for her ultimately if she had, but she doesn't care. So it doesn't, I suppose it doesn't matter if you don't care.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
What else has happened today of note? Who have we seen? Johanna Konta we saw first. I mean, that was 12 hours ago when we were commentating on that.
That felt like a big win for her, I thought.
It was a big win.
A bit like Simona Halep, really, same
yes.
sort of
big mental
boost. I mean, she wasn't really willing to admit that. But, you know, we know what Johanna Konta's like in terms of
7-6,
her mental approach
4-6,
to the game.
7-6, and it was one of those... Now, we were having a real old job trying to work out, what do you call... The champions tiebreak. Do you call it a super tiebreak? Do you call it a match tiebreak? Do you call it a first to 10 point
tiebreak?
Well, I
call it a champions tiebreak, but that's because, just like you, David, I worked on the champions tour and that it was a champions tiebreak because it was, you know, originated
it doesn't really
on the champions
work.
Tour.
Super tiebreak is
absolutely
probably the best.
Definitely not. All my votes against super tiebreak.
Yeah, there's nothing
Why?
Super about it.
No.
Extended.
Oh, yeah, that's, I mean, you know, it can sexy really promote Matt. That.
Sexy.
Very, yeah.
Although rather better than
extra
the one
extra bit of tiebreak.
I did read one that said somebody said today the elongated tiebreak. Like, yeah, I mean, that's going in a marketing campaign.
Prolonged,
that.
Protracted,
well, whatever they are,
unnecessary.
The Brits are pretty good at them.
At Tennis Podcast, what should we call the third set or fifth set tiebreak at the Australian Open?
Seems
which
to only be a third set tiebreak.
New this year. There was one today.
Was there? Jeremy Chardy beats his fellow Frenchman.
Humbert or something
Hugo
like that?
Hugo Humbert. Jeremy Chardy's on for the potential upset alert.
Against Zverev. Although, come on, Zverev.
Made better now.
He did.
Yeah.
He looked good today, Zverev.
Yeah.
And then he described himself as having the perfect body to Jim Courier.
Close to perfection.
Yeah. I mean, I think that was very much tongue-in-cheek.
We've all been there when asked.
With a straight face, he said it. But I thought he was good value in that interview, actually.
It was certainly good value when written down.
Yeah.
I just read it on Twitter. And it certainly provided good value.
Yeah. I tell you who wasn't good today was Nick Kyrgios. He apparently had some sort of knee problem after about 8 games. And then he proceeded to just whinge about said knee problem for the next hour and a half. I didn't listen to all of his press comments, but he lost in straight sets to Milos Raonic. And he just looked sorry for himself throughout the whole match to me.
Yeah, he said in press that he's never seen serving like it from Milos Raonic.
Mm.
And certainly Milos Raonic did serve well, but he also admitted that his return game just really wasn't up to it. He said better players would be able to get, you know, block and neutralise that serve. I just can't do it. He didn't seem to express any desire to want to be able to do it.
His highest possible ranking?
67.
Is 67
it?
Now.
Oh, crikey.
Could be worse, depending on other
but
results.
That's right. Where he is.
He has really gone backwards, hasn't he? Tanasi Kakanakis won the first set today, 7-5. He qualified and came through and won the first set 7-5 today and then had to retire with yet another injury. He basically, he pulled a muscle in his pectoral muscle or something like that, and he just couldn't serve anymore. And I read his press conference transcript afterwards, and he was asked about the comments of Bernard Tomic yesterday, which we didn't get a chance to cover because of obviously all the Andy Murray news, and it sort of got lost a little bit in the mix and then has come out again today. But Bernard Tomic, who said some really inflammatory stuff about Leighton Hewitt and questioning why on earth he's on the tour and playing doubles, and that he's got conflicted interests of being a manager. I think we might have touched on it, of players like Alex Diminor and players of that ilk. It just got me thinking, how dysfunctional is Australian tennis, and how long it has been like this? Because I go back to when Leighton Hewitt was 18 years of age and at loggerheads with the Australian public. Absolute. I mean, now he seems to have a good relationship with them. They've grown to appreciate him and his achievements, etc. But for a long, long time, if you weren't Pat Rafter, you weren't good enough in the eyes of a lot of people. And it seems, I'm trying to work out, where does the fault lie? You know, is it the players blame the media? The media say, well, the players have got a problem. The public just don't seem to like a lot of their players. Mark Philippoussis, who Catherine and I know a little bit, and I think is a really nice bloke. I mean, he put his foot in it horribly throughout his career on a lot of occasions, but a nice enough bloke. And now we have this situation. I mean, it seems hard to believe that you interviewed... Do you remember when you interviewed at the Davis Cup Britain against Australia? You interviewed that Davis Cup team. Mm. Hewitt, captaining, Tomic, Kokkinakis. And it was a really nice atmosphere between them all, wasn't it? And now,
yeah,
and now,
that's a good point,
none
actually
of them get along at all.
Yeah, and I have to say, I'm surprised to see Kokkinakis involved, embroiled in all of that.
Well, I mean, because he was asked...
I don't think it's particularly controversial to say that obviously Nick Kyrgios and Bernard Tomic are two people very capable of probably falling out with pretty much anyone.
Yeah, in an empty room.
In the right circumstances. But I'm just surprised that...
I don't know whether Kokkinakis is involved.
I'm pretty certain
he?
As I understand it, and I feel pretty confident about it, this kind of two factions.
Right.
There's Kokkinakis, Kyrgios and Tomic, who are very much anti-Hewitt, and there is Diminor and John Millman. They're very good friends and very much involved with Leighton Hewitt. Obviously, Alex Diminor shares a manager with Leighton, and there's all of that, but... it is an incredibly divided scene in Australian tennis. Mm. And Bernard Tomic, I mean, yeah. Nick Kyrgios, that, but a bit less so. But Kokkinakis, and also, like, he doesn't need all this aggro. I mean, no, look what the bloke's got to contend with. He's 22, and he's as injury struck as any 32-year-old. I mean, he has had the most...
He did try to stay out of it. When he was asked about it, he just said, look, I'm not answering any questions about that. So he shut that down immediately. So, I mean, he didn't add any fuel to it. But it's a weird situation.
Well, good on him for that, because,
It is weird, though, what's happened.
Do you think this is why Alex Diminor is getting such a big... sort of backing here? Because
I think there's a number of things. I think Alex Diminor fits for the vast majority of Australian viewers. He's full-hearted. He's a young lad. He's a nice guy. He's trying his heart out, quite clearly, and he hasn't let anybody down yet. You know,
he's the right balance of swagger and humility.
But he's the blue-eyed boy next door, isn't
he?
Yeah,
but I don't know. I'm not sure that's quite... No, I don't think he's cookie cutter
I mean, I really like
him. Do you mean
like
literally? Does he have blue eyes?
You know what I mean.
I just don't think he's quite as square as that. I think there's a bit slightly more edge to him than that.
Well, I like him. I love watching him play.
But you say they've got... I mean... They scheduled it after in reaching the final in Sydney on Saturday, winning the final in Sydney on Saturday, they scheduled him heat of the day.
Yeah, he was annoyed about
mid-afternoon on
was
Monday.
He?
And
he was annoyed
and he,
about that.
And he, yeah, I mean, I know they've not offered any leniency with scheduling players that had played up until Saturday. Cam Norrie expressed dissatisfaction of that on Monday. But they can.
Put them on in the eve.
Yeah, they can exercise discretion in when they put them. And you'd certainly think that they would elect to do that with their own players. And they certainly didn't with Alex Diminor.
Hey, Denis Shapovalov looked good today, didn't he?
He did, whisper it quietly.
Yeah.
There was that one moment when he's two sets and 5-4 up and serving for the match and he dropped his serve against Pablo Andujar, who's a lovely bloke. Anyway.
But his serve, apart from that moment, was a lot better. He had double fault-itis last season, Shapovalov, but again, he hit two or three today, which was much better. Mm. And 50 winners, I think. So.
And flew a little bit under the radar as well, despite the fact that we're talking about him here. You know, yes, he was on a sort of show court, but just let him do his thing and get through to that Djokovic match.
Yeah. And then he can soar.
Exactly.
And be flashy and fun.
Who else soared today, Matt?
Sorry?
Who else soared today?
Who else saw?
Out on court number 20.
Yes.
Who was it?
Court 20.
Yeah, because Matt, you may remember.
Out by the bins.
Out by the train line. There's a train literally going straight past the court.
Matt sent us a photo.
I know. I was there with Tatsu Morito and Dan Evans for all of yesterday.
Matt sent us a photo of his vantage point.
Oh, this was a disgrace.
From the front row of the seats, and you couldn't actually see a court, could you?
No. I was hoping to get on court 20 to catch the end of Goffin, where this player who we're about to talk about was coming on next. But I thought, I've got a few minutes.
Next big thing.
I'll go and watch João Sousa and Guido Paella. They're in a fifth set. It was a good moment. I saw the front row was free on this court. I thought, I'll sit down there. I sat down and you cannot see the court from the front row. All you can
any
see.
Of it.
Any of it. Literally none of it. All you can see is just a black fence. And then heads bobbing above it. And occasionally the ball.
I mean, that's not even restricted view, you know, like where you get a pillar.
And I sat down and started a trend. It was like when people put their bins out. People then started following me and sitting down. And people were like, oh, this isn't very good, is it? I mean, I was staying just because I knew I was moving on and I thought it was a bit of a laugh and I wanted to send you the picture. But people were getting quite upset about it.
And just to enlighten you as to why Matt was making such an effort to be in this position. I mean, look, he had to get his seat before anybody else did for the Victoria Kuzmova match.
Get it right, David.
What's her name? Who is she? Again?
Victoria Kuzmova.
Right, okay, who Matt has got in his quarterfinals. Now, look, she's ranked 48 in the world, and she reached the final of whatever
it was.
Semi-final of Auckland. Ooh. So the woman can play. Yeah. No, she's 20 years old, yeah, right? She's going great places. I'd know nothing
really
about
soon,
her.
Really soon, apparently.
Yeah, and Matt's got her in his quarterfinals. So anyway, obviously, off he goes, loyal as a lamb, to go and find out whether she's going to do him proud. She promptly loses the first set. and there's lots of panic on our WhatsApp group. However, she turned it around. Tell us a little bit. Obviously, Matt's going to be
writing. You know.
Matt's going to be writing
blog
his
coming later.
Yes, his day two diary. His day two Melbourne diary.
I think we
diary.
Might need to give it a bigger sell than you'll find out everything you need to know about Victoria Kuzmova.
Oh, there's loads more, folks. Just read it. Is all I say. But just a little bit. What do we think now that you've?
She's
picked her
powerful.
To win the title.
She's powerful. She's a risk taker. And she's going to lose to Svitolina.
Yeah, she's up against Elena Svitolina, who just walloped somebody 6-2, 6-love today, I think, something like that.
Yeah. But no, it was a relief that she won, and it does at least keep this little intrigue going.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Can't wait. Right, what we got tomorrow? Let's find out what the order of play looks like tomorrow.
Federer in the day.
Oh, yes, against dangerous Dan Evans. That's happening. Third match on Rod Laver Arena, not before 2 p.m. local time.
There's a part of me that wondered, and this is clutching at Dan Evans' straws here.
You're going to back him?
No.
For the
no, I'm just saying, if you're Dan Evans, When was the last time we saw Federer play in extreme, intoxicating heat?
Oh, John Millman, when we actually saw Roger Federer
sweat. If I was Dan Evans, and I was looking for rays of sunlight in a potentially quite bleak horizon, I would think, you know, that might be one.
And he likes the heat, doesn't he, old
yeah,
Dan?
Yeah, I have to say. I mean, no, he doesn't like it.
He does. He loves it.
He doesn't.
He
spent an hour and a half yesterday demanding paracetamol from the umpire.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, he likes to have a whinge. It's not even going to be that hot tomorrow.
I've got a headache.
It's only going to be 28 degrees Celsius tomorrow.
Oh, I don't think that's enough to... No. Discombobulate.
Can we add 20 degrees on that before tomorrow? Anyway.
I don't think he deals with it well, but I don't think he likes it.
I think he loves it. Honestly, I do. He was fine. I've never seen him lose in the heat. Sloane Stephens opens Rod Laver Arena.
Never seen him lose in the heat?
Correct. Clip that. I've said it. Tamea Babos is Stephens' opponent. Then it's Ash Barty against Wang Yafan. Then Dan Evans against Roger Federer. Evening session is Kerber against Haddad Maia. And then Nadal against Ebden. We've also got Katie Bolter playing tomorrow as well, haven't we?
Third on the not Hisense Arena, the Melbourne Arena.
Arena. Yeah, after Kontaveit against... Hey, that's a good match. Kontaveit against
really
Sasnovic. Ooh. I want to watch that. And then it's Cilic against McDonald, followed by Bolter against Sabalenka. What do we think? Any chance for Katie Bolter?
I don't think so. I think Sabalenka's going to move her around too much. I was, as we discussed, I was very impressed with Katie Bolter yesterday, but her movement is a weakness, and I think it will be exposed. She's good at the angles, Sabalenka. She's good at getting people on the move. And if it comes to first-strike tennis, I mean, you'd back Sabalenka against almost anyone.
Yeah, crikey, pretty much. I'm a bit worried about Grigor Dimitrov against Pablo Cuevas. I'll leave that there. This has been the Tennis Podcast. I'm going to try not to think about it.
Naomi
Osaka. And also, incidentally, just court level watching Naomi Osaka from our commentary box is an awesome sight. She had a 25-stroke rally with Magda Linette, and Linette was trying her heart out, playing beautiful tennis. And it was almost as though suddenly, in the last two grand strokes of the rally, Osaka just said, "I've had enough of this." And just boom, and then boom, and then it's over. And the woman's power is extraordinary. The physicality she has. What a player. Anyway.
Djokovic won as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Djokovic won straight sets and quite easily.
Kanishikori almost lost.
Ooh.
Yeah, he tried his best to lose. But
yeah, Kanishikori beat Cramp.
He did.
Yes, he did. And actually,
a severe crack. He couldn't the racket or walk.
Yeah, bloke. He got the trainer. I was watching it on mute, so I was trying to interpret the mime of Kasim, surname I can't pronounce, of Poland.
Pronounce or spell.
Or spell, yeah. Who just won the first two sets against
Kanishikori.
Brilliant tennis. I was so impressed with him. And he sat there, the trainer's crouched in front of him, and I saw him point to four different parts of his body. And I just thought,
together.
Oh, no.
Oh, well. Right, okay, well, let's come back tomorrow. We might actually get out of here before midnight tonight, folks, so we're going to go and rest up. We'll be back with more tennis podcasts throughout the Australian Open. Read Gradmat's Melbourne Diary. It is a good read, I promise you. Tennispodcast.net. And if you've enjoyed this show, tell people that you know, your mates, your family, anybody who likes tennis, get them downloading this show, and we'll be back again tomorrow. We are executive produced by tennisballs.com. Our mascot is Rio the dog. I'm having to get used to saying Rio the dog because he's our new mascot. Because, folks, we are officially kickstarted thanks to you. It's over. I don't have to ask you for anything anymore. Not even cheese boards for Catherine. Not even two beers for Two Beers Law. We're off. See you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.